to him in fees. Oh, and by the way, if it loses money, you lose, and he still gets paid. Are you in? I'm sure you don't need any time to think this through. It's a no-brainer. Your gut response has to be, "There's no way I'm doing this. How absurd." The only problem is, if you're like 90% of American investors, you've invested in a typical mutual fund, and believe it or not, these are the terms to which you've already agreed. That's right. There is $13 trillion in actively managed mutual funds with 265 million account holders around the world. How in the world do you convince 92 million Americans to participate in a strategy where they willingly give up 60% or more of their potential lifetime investment upside with no guaranteed return? To solve this riddle, I sat down with the 85-year-old investment guru Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, whose 64 years on Wall Street have made him uniquely qualified to shed light on this financial phenomenon. His answer? Marketing. Tony, it's simple. Most people don't do the math, and the fees are hidden. Try this. If you made a one-time investment of $10,000 at age 20, and assuming 7% annual growth over time, you would have $574,464 by the time you're nearly my age, 80. But if you paid 2.5% in total management fees and other expenses, your ending account balance would only be $140,274 over the same period. Let's see if we've got this straight. You provided all the capital. You took all the risk. You got to keep $140,274, but you give up $439,190 to an active manager? They take 77% of your potential returns? For what? Exactly. Money Power Principle 1. Don't get in the game unless you know the rules. Millions of investors worldwide are systematically marketed a set of myths, investment lies, that guide their decision-making. This conventional wisdom is often designed to keep you in the dark. When it comes to your money, what you don't know can and likely will hurt you. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is pain. Ignorance is struggle. Ignorance is giving your fortune away to someone who hasn't earned it. A failed experiment. It's not just high-cost mutual funds that are the problem. This example is just a peek under the sheets at a system designed to separate you from your money. Without exception, every expert I've interviewed for this book, from the top hedge funds managers to Nobel Prize winners, agree that the game has changed. Our parents didn't have a fraction of the complexity or dangers to deal with that we have today. Why? They had a pension, a guaranteed income for life. They had CDs that paid conservative but reasonable rates, not the 0.22% you would be paid at the time of this writing, which won't even keep up with inflation. And some had the privilege of putting small investments into steady dividend-paying blue-chip stocks. That ship has sailed. The new system, which really got rolling in the early 80s with the introduction of the 401k, is an experiment that's now been conducted for the most part on the single largest generation in U.S. history, the baby boomers. How is this experiment working? "This do-it-yourself pension system has failed," said Teresa Ghilarducci, a nationally recognized expert in retirement security at the New School for Social Research and outspoken critic of the system as we know it. "It has failed because it expects individuals without investment expertise to reap the same results as professional investors and money managers. What results would you expect if you were asked to pull your own teeth or do your own electrical wiring?" What's changed? We exchanged our guaranteed retirement pensions with an intentionally complex and often extremely dangerous system filled with hidden fees, which gave us freedom of choice. And somehow, in the midst of working your tail off, providing for your family, staying in shape, and taking care of the important relationships in your life, you are supposed to become an investment professional. You're supposed to be able to navigate this labyrinth of products, services, and unending risk of your hard-earned money. It's near impossible. That's why most people give their money to a professional, often a broker. A broker who by definition works for a company that is not required by law to do what's in your best interest. More on this baffling concept in Myth 4. A broker who gets paid to funnel your money to the products that may be the most profitable for himself and or the firm he works. Now, let me be clear. This is not another Bash Wall Street book. Many of the large financial institutions have pioneered some extraordinary products that we will explore and advocate throughout this book. And the vast majority of people in the financial services industry care intensely for their clients, and more often than not, they are doing what they believe to be the best thing. Unfortunately, many don't also understand how the house reaps profits, whether the client wins or not. They are doing the best they can for their clients with the knowledge, training, and the tools, products, they have been provided. But the system isn't set up for your broker to have endless options and complete autonomy in finding what's best for you, and this could prove costly. Giving up a disproportionate amount of your potential returns to fees is just one of the pitfalls you must avoid if you plan on winning the game. And here is the best news yet. The game is still winnable. In fact, it's more than winnable. It's exciting as hell. Yes, there are major challenges and more pitfalls you must avoid, but consider how far we have come. Today, with the click of a button and a minimal charge, you can invest in just about anything you want, anywhere in the world you want. It's easier than it's ever been to do pretty well, said James Clunan in a recent Wall Street Journal article. Clunan is founder of the nonprofit American Association of Individual Investors. You just have to decide to do the right thing. Heck, just 35 years ago, you had to spend hours in a public library or write away to a company just to see its financial statements. Brokerage costs and mutual fund fees were outlandish. Tax rates were larcenous, wrote Jason Zweig in his Wall Street Journal article, "Even when stocks make you nervous, count your blessings." Aside from high-frequency traders, technology has made the world of investing a much more efficient space for all of us. And this fits perfectly with the millennial generation who wouldn't accept anything less. For us, it's all about convenience, Emily exclaimed, my personal assistant, who is a straight-down-the-fairway millennial. There is no tolerance for slow or inefficient. We truly want everything to be at the touch of a button. We order everything on Amazon. We lift one finger and it's done. I can stream a movie on Netflix. I can get a car registration online. I can buy stocks online. I can do my online presentation. This morning I took a picture of my check and had it in my bank account by 6. I didn't even have to get out of my pajamas. The house has the edge. Steve Wynn, the billionaire gambling mogul credited with transforming Las Vegas into the entertainment capital of the world, is one of my dearest friends. The casinos he's built are considered to be some of the most magnificent playgrounds in the world. Through it all, he's made his fortune from one simple truth. The house has the edge. But by no means does he have a guaranteed victory. On any given night, a high-rolling gambler can take millions out of Steve's pocket, and they can also leave if his house doesn't completely captivate them. On the other hand, nearly all mutual fund companies have a stacked deck. They are the ultimate casino. They've captured you, you're going nowhere, and they are guaranteed revenue whether you win or not. Twice burned. After 2008, when the U.S. stock market lost more than 37%, the financial world was completely changed for most Americans. Even 5 years later, a survey from Prudential Financial showed that 44% of American investors still say they would never put their money in the stock market again, while 58% say they lost faith in the market. But the insiders are still in the game. Why? Because they know better. They know the right way to play the game. They know that today there are powerful tools and strategies that have never existed before. Get this. Today you can use a tool issued and backed by one of the largest banks in the world that will give you 100% principal protection guaranteed by their balance sheet and allow you to participate in 75% to 90% of the upside of the market, the S&P 500, without being capped. That's right. This is not a misprint. You can participate in up to 90% of the upside but if the market collapses, you still get 100% of your money back. Sounds too good to be true? And if a product like this did exist, you would have already heard of it, right? Wrong. The reason? In the past, to even hear about this, you had to be in the top 1% of the 1%. These are not retail solutions where they sit on the shelf. These are custom designed for those with enough money to partake. This is just one example of how, as an insider, you'll soon know the new rules of how to achieve wealth with minimal risk. Risk comes from not knowing what you're doing. Warren Buffett. The road less traveled. The journey ahead is one that requires your full participation. Together we are going to climb this mountain called financial freedom. It's your personal Mount Everest. It won't be easy, and it will require preparation. You don't head up Everest without a very clear understanding of the dangers that lie ahead. Some are known, and some could sneak up on you like a violent storm. So before we set foot on the mountain, we must fully grasp what's on the path before us. One false step could mean the difference between wondering how you will pay next month's mortgage and an abundant life free of financial stress. We can't ask someone to climb it for us, but we also can't do it alone. We need a guide who has our best interests at heart. The pinnacle. The core concept of successful investing is simple. Grow your savings to a point at which the interest from your investments will generate enough income to support your lifestyle without having to work. Eventually, you reach a tipping point at which your savings will hit a critical mass. This simply means that you don't have to work anymore unless you choose to, because the interest and growth being generated by your account gives you the income you need for your life. This is the pinnacle we are climbing toward. The great news is, if you become an insider, today there are new and unique solutions and strategies that will accelerate our climb and even protect us from sliding backward. But before we explore these solutions in more depth, let's map out our journey with more clarity. There are two phases to your investing game: the accumulation phase, in which you are socking away money for growth, and the decumulation, during which you are withdrawing income. The journey up the mountain will represent our accumulation phase, with the goal of reaching the pinnacle, or critical mass. The goal is to stay on top of the mountain as long as we can, to take in the views and breathe in the fresh air of freedom and accomplishment. There will be many hurdles, obstacles, and if you're not alert, even lies that will prevent you from reaching the peak. To ensure our best chance of success, we will flush these out in the chapters to come. And when we enter the second act of our life, when it's time to enjoy what we made, we will have the freedom to work only if we want to. At this stage, we will ski down the mountain and enjoy ourselves, spending time with the ones we love, building our legacy, and making a difference. It's during this phase that we will eliminate the number one fear of baby boomers, the fear of outliving our money. The second phase is rarely discussed by the asset management industry that is focused on keeping money invested. It's not about having some arbitrary amount of money in your account on some given day, exclaimed Dr. Jeffrey Brown, professor of finance at University of Illinois and consultant to the U.S. Treasury and the World Bank. I think a lot of people are going to get to retirement and suddenly wake up and realize, you know what, I did a fairly good job. I have all this money sitting here, but I don't know how long I'm going to live, and I don't know what my investment returns are going to be, and I don't know what inflation is going to be. What do I do? After I read one of his recent Forbes columns, I called Dr. Brown to see if he would be willing to sit down and share specific solutions for investors of all shapes and sizes. We'll sit down and hear from Dr. Brown on how to create income for life and even how to make it tax-free in his interview in Section 5, Upside Without the Downside, Create a Lifetime Income Plan. And who better to outline the solution than the man who is not only a top academic expert, but was also one of only 7 people appointed by the President of the United States to the Social Security Advisory Board. Break the chains. In the words of David Swensen, one of the most successful institutional investors of our time, to have unconventional success, you can't be guided by conventional wisdom. Let's shatter the top 9 financial myths that misguide the masses and, more importantly, uncover the new rules of money, the truths that will set you financially free. Let's start with the biggest myth of all. Chapter 2.1. Myth 1. The $13 trillion lie. Invest with us, we'll beat the market. The goal of the non-professional should not be to pick winners. Neither he nor his helpers can do that, but should rather be to own a cross-section of businesses that in aggregate are bound to do well. A low-cost S&P 500 index fund will achieve this goal. Warren Buffett, 2013 letter to shareholders. When you look at the results on an after-fee, after-tax basis, over reasonably long periods of time, there's almost no chance that you end up beating the index fund. David Swensen, author of Unconventional Success and manager of Yale University's more than $20 billion endowment. Financial entertainment. When you turn on the financial news today, you can see that it is less news and more sensationalism. Talking heads debate with zeal. Stock pickers scream their hot picks of the day while sound effects smash, crash, and ka-ching through our living room speakers. Reporters film live on the scene directly from the trenches of the exchange floor. The system, paid for by advertisers, breeds the feeling that maybe we are missing out. If only we had a hot tip. If only we knew the next must-own mutual fund manager that would surely be the five-star comet. Mutual funds are rated between 1 and 5 stars by rating authority Morningstar. Chasing returns is big business. Personal finance writer Jane Bryant Quinn once coined this sensational hype as financial porn, luring us into glossy pages where the centerfolds are swapped with 5-star ratings and promises of carefree walks on the beach and fishing off the dock with our grandkids. The bottom line is that advertisers are fighting to get a grasp on our money. The war for your assets rages on. So where do you put your money? Who can you trust? Who will protect you and get you the best return on your investment? These are the immediate questions that are sure to come to mind now that you've committed to becoming an investor, now that you've committed to socking away a percentage of your income. So where do most people put their money for the long haul? Usually the stock market. And the stock market has indeed been the best long-term investment over the past 100 years. As Steve Forbes pointed out at one of my financial events in Sun Valley, Idaho in 2014, $1 million invested in stocks in 1935 is worth $2.4 billion today if you held on. But the moment you open an IRA or participate in your 401k plan at work, there will be a jolly salesman or sales process telling you to park your money in a mutual fund. And by buying an actively managed mutual fund, what exactly are you buying? You are buying into the fund manager in hopes that his or her stock-picking abilities will be better than yours. A completely natural assumption, since we have insanely busy lives and our version of picking stocks would be the equivalent of throwing darts. So, we hand over our money to a 5-star, actively managed mutual fund manager who, by definition, is actively trying to beat the market by being a better stock picker than the next guy. But few firms will discuss what is sometimes called the $13 trillion lie. That's how much money is in mutual funds. Are you ready for this? An incredible 96% of actively managed mutual funds fail to beat the market over any sustained period of time. So let's be clear. When we say beat the market as a whole, we are generally referring to a stock index. What's an index, you ask? Some of you might know, but I don't want to risk leaving anyone in the dark, so let's shed a little light. An index is simply a basket or list of stocks. The S&P 500 is an index. It's a list of the top companies by market capitalization in the U.S. as selected by Standard & Poor's. Companies like Apple, Exxon, and Amazon make up the list. Each day they measure how all 500 stocks performed as an aggregate, and when you turn on the news at night, you hear if the market, all the stocks on the list collectively, was either up or down. So instead of buying all the stocks individually or trying to pick the next high flyer, you can diversify and own a piece of all 500 top stocks simply by investing in a low-cost index fund that tracks or mimics the index. One single investment buys you a piece of the strength of American capitalism. In a way, you are buying into the fact that over the past 100 years, the top-tier companies have always shown incredible resiliency. Even through depressions, recessions, and world wars, they have continued to find ways to add value, grow, and drive increasing revenues. And if a company fails to keep making the grade, they fall off the list and are replaced with another top performer. The point here is that by investing in the index, you don't have to pay a professional to try and pick which stocks in the index you should own. It's effectively been done for you because Standard & Poor's has selected the top 500 already. By the way, there are a number of different indexes out there. Many of us have heard of the Dow Jones Index, for example, and we will explore others soon. 10,000 options. There are 7,707 different mutual funds in the United States, but only 4,900 individual stocks, all vying for a chance to help you beat the market. But the statistic is worth repeating. 96% will fail to match or beat the market over any extended period. Is this groundbreaking news? No, not to insiders. Not to the smart money. As Ray Dalio told me emphatically, you're not going to beat the market. No one does. Only a few gold medalists. He just happens to be one of those medalists honest enough to issue the warning. Don't try this at home. Even Warren Buffett, known for his incredibly unique ability to find undervalued stocks, says that the average investor should never attempt to pick stocks or time the market. In his famous 2014 letter to his shareholders, he explained that when he passes away, the money in a trust for his wife should only be invested in indexes so that she minimizes her cost and maximizes her upside. Buffett is so sure that professional stock pickers can't win over time that he was more than happy to put his money where his mouth is. In January 2008, Buffett made a $1 million wager against New York-based Protégé Partners, with the winnings going to charity. The bet? Can Protégé pick five top hedge fund managers that will collectively beat the S&P 500 index over a 10-year period? As of February 2014, the S&P 500 is up 43.8%, while the five hedge funds are up 12.5%. There are still a few years left, but the lead looks like the world's fastest man, Usain Bolt, running against a pack of Boy Scouts. Note, for those unfamiliar with what a hedge fund is, it is essentially a private, closed-door fund for only high-net-worth investors, where the managers can have total flexibility to bet for the market and make money when it goes up, or against the market and make money when it goes down. The facts are the facts are the facts. Industry expert Robert Arnott and founder of Research Affiliates spent two decades studying the top 200 actively managed mutual funds that had at least $100 million under management. The results are startling. From 1984 to 1998, a full 15 years, only 8 out of the 200 fund managers beat the Vanguard 500 Index. The Vanguard 500 Index is an index fund put together by founder Jack Bogle, which is a mirror image of the S&P 500 Index. That's less than 4% odds that you pick a winner. If you've ever played blackjack, you know the goal is to get as close to 21 without going over or busting. By way of comparison, if you get dealt two face cards in blackjack, each face card is worth 10, so now your total is 20, and your inner idiot shouts, "Hit me," you have about an 8% chance of winning. Just how badly does chasing performance hurt us? Over a 20-year period, December 31, 1993 through December 31, 2013, the S&P 500 returned an average annual return of 9.28%, but the average mutual fund investor made just over 2.54%, according to Dalbar, one of the leading industry research firms. Ouch. A nearly 80% difference. In real life, this can mean the difference between financial freedom and financial despair. Said another way, If you were the person who simply owned the S&P 500, you would have turned your $10,000 into $55,916. Whereas the mutual fund investor, who was sold on the illusion that he or she could outperform the market, ended up with only $16,386. Why the huge performance gap? Because we buy high and sell low. We follow our emotions or our broker's recommendations and jump from fund to fund, always looking for an edge. But when the market falls, when we can't take the emotional pain any longer, we sell. And when the market is up, we buy more. As Barton Biggs observed, a bull market is like sex. It feels best just before it ends. Wisdom of Ages. At 82 years young, Burt Malkiel has lived through every conceivable market cycle and new marketing fad. When he wrote A Random Walk Down Wall Street, he had no idea it would become one of the classic investment books in history. The core thesis of his book is market timing is a loser's game. In section 4, we will sit down and you'll hear from Burt, but for now, what you need to know is that he was the first guy to come up with the rationale of an index fund, which again, does not try to beat the market but simply mimics or matches the market. Among investors, this strategy is called indexing or passive investing. This style is contrary to active investing, in which you pay a mutual fund manager to actively make choices about which stocks to buy or sell. The manager is trading stocks, actively working with hopes of beating the market. Jack Bogle, founder of the behemoth Vanguard, subsequently bet the future direction of his company on this idea by creating the first index fund. When I sat down with Jack for this book, he echoed why Vanguard has become the largest index mutual fund manager in the world. His best single rant, maximum diversification, minimal cost, and maximum tax efficiency, low turnover trading, and low turnover cost, and no sales loads. How's that for an elevator pitch? Shortcut. Now, you might be thinking that there must be some people who can beat the market. Why else would there be $13 trillion in actively managed mutual funds? Mutual fund managers certainly have streaks where they do, in fact, beat the market. The question is whether or not they can sustain that advantage over time. But as Jack Bogle said, it all comes down to marketing. It's our human nature to strive to be faster, better, smarter than the next guy. And thus, selling a hot fund is not difficult to do. It sells itself. And when it inevitably turns cold, there will be another hot one ready to serve up. As for the 4% that do beat the market, they aren't the same 4% the next time around. Jack shared with me what he says is the funniest way to get this point across. Tony, if you pack 1,024 gorillas into a gymnasium and teach them each to flip a coin, one of them will flip heads 10 times in a row. Most would call that luck, but when that happens in the fund business, we call him a genius. And what are the odds it's the same gorilla after the next 10 flips? To quote a study from Dimensional Fund Advisors, run by 2013 Nobel Prize winner Eugene Fama, so who still believes markets don't work? Apparently, it is only the North Koreans, the Cubans, and the active managers. This part of the book is where anyone hearing it who works in the financial services industry will either nod in agreement or press the off button. Some will even be gathering the troops to mount an attack. It's a polarizing issue, without a doubt. We all want to believe that by hiring the smartest and most talented mutual fund manager, we will achieve financial freedom more quickly. After all, who doesn't want a shortcut up the mountain? And here's the crazy thing. As much as everyone is entitled to their own opinion, nobody is entitled to their own facts. Sure, some mutual fund managers will say, we may not outperform on the upside, but when the market goes down, we can take active measures to protect you so you won't lose as much. That might be comforting if it were true. The goal in investing is to get the maximum net return for a given amount of risk and ideally the lowest cost. So let's see how the fund managers did when the market was down. And 2008 is as good a place to start as any. Between 2008 and early 2009, the market had its worst one-year slide since the Great Depression, 51% from top to bottom, to be exact. The managers had plenty of time to make defensive moves. Maybe when the market was down 15% or 25% or 35%, they would have taken appropriate measures. Once again, the facts speak for themselves. Whether the fund manager was trying to beat the S&P Growth Index, made up of companies such as Microsoft, Qualcomm, and Google, or trying to beat the S&P Small Cap Index, made up of smaller companies such as Yelp, once again, the stock pickers fell short. According to a 2012 report titled S&P Indices vs. Active Funds Scorecard, SPIVA for short, the S&P 500 Growth Index outperformed 89.9% of large-cap growth mutual funds, while the S&P 500 Small-Cap 600 Growth Index outperformed 95.5% of small-cap growth managers. The Unicorns. Now, having made it clear that almost nobody beats the market over time, I will give one caveat. There are a tiny group of hedge fund managers who do the seemingly impossible by beating the market consistently. But they are the unicorns, the rarest of the rare, the magicians, the market wizards. Like David Einhorn of Greenlight Capital, who is up 2,287%, no, that's not a typo, since launching his fund in 1996 and has only one negative year on his track record. But unfortunately, it doesn't do the average investor any good to know they are out there because their doors are closed to new investors. Ray Dalio's fund, Bridgewater, hasn't accepted new investors in over 10 years, but when it did, it required a minimum investment of $100 million and $5 billion in investable assets. Gulp. Paul Tudor Jones, who hasn't lost money in over 28 years, called his investors recently and sent back $2 billion. When a hedge fund gets too big, it's harder to get in and get out of the market, harder to buy and sell their investments quickly and easily, and being slow means lower returns. Before you begin to think this is a glowing report on hedge funds, let me be clear. For the fifth year in a row, ending in 2012, the vast majority of hedge fund managers have underperformed the S&P 500. According to the financial news site Zero Hedge, in 2012, the average fund returned 8% as opposed to 16% for the S&P 500. In 2013, they returned an average of 7.4%, while the S&P soared to 29.6%, its best year since 1997. I am sure their wealthy clients weren't too pleased. And to add insult to injury, they usually charge 2% per year for management, take 20% of the overall profits, and the gains you do receive are often taxed at the highest ordinary income rates. Painful. The biggest bank in the world. No matter what aspect of life, I'm always looking for the exception to the rule, as that's where outstanding tends to live. Mary Callahan Erdos fits that bill. In an industry dominated by men, she has risen to the top of the financial world. Wall Street is a place where performance speaks louder than words, and Erdos' performance has been extraordinary. Her consistent breakthrough results have led her to become the CEO of J.P. Morgan's asset management business, and she now oversees portfolios that total more than $2.5 trillion. Yes, that's trillion with a T. We had a fantastic interview for this book, and she shared some profound wisdom, which we will cover in Section 6. But when I brought up the studies that no manager beats the market over time, she was quick to point out that many of J.P. Morgan's fund managers have beaten the market in their respective classes over the past 10 years. Why? The examples she provided didn't lose as much as the market when the market went down. This difference, she says, is what provided the edge they needed to stay ahead. Erdos and many industry experts agree that certain, less developed or emerging markets provide an opportunity for active managers to get an edge. They have the opportunity to gain an even greater advantage in frontier markets, places such as Kenya and Vietnam, where information isn't as transparent and doesn't travel as fast. Erdos says this is where a firm such as J.P. Morgan has massive reach and resources and can use its on-the-ground contacts in the community to give them valuable insights in real time. According to Jack Bogle, there is no empirical basis to show that active management is more effective for all the major asset classes, large cap growth, value, core, mid cap growth, and so on. But it does appear that these frontier markets present opportunities for active management to sometimes outperform. Will they continue to outperform going forward? Only time will tell. It will be up to you to evaluate them for yourself, and don't forget to take into account the fees and the taxes, which we will discuss in the next chapter. All weather. You might be hearing this book in a bull market, a bear market, or a sideways market. Who knows? The point is that you need to have your investment set up to stand the test of time. An all-weather portfolio. The people I've interviewed have done well in both good times and bad, and we can all count on ups and downs in the future. Life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass, it's about learning to dance in the rain. It's about removing the fear in this area of your life so you can focus on what matters most. When, where, and how. So what does the all-weather portfolio look like? Where do I put my money, Tony? First, you don't have to waste your time trying to pick stocks yourself or pick the best mutual fund. A portfolio of low-cost index funds is the best approach for a percentage of your investments because we don't know what stocks will be best going forward. And how cool to know that by passively owning the market, you are beating 96% of the world's expert mutual fund managers and nearly as many hedge fund managers. It's time to free yourself from the burden of trying to pick the winner of the race. As Jack Bogle told me, in investing, it feels counterintuitive. The secret? Don't do something, just stand there. And by becoming the market and not trying to beat it, you are on the side of progress, growth, and expansion. So far, we have referred many times to the market or the S&P 500. But remember that the S&P 500 is only one of many indexes or markets. Most have heard of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. There are others such as a commodities index, a real estate index, a short-term bond index, a long-term bond index, a gold index, and so on. How much of each to buy is critical and something we will get to in Section 4. In fact, how would you like to have Ray Dalio tell you what his ideal allocation would be? The strategy he shares ahead has made just under 10% annually and lost money in only four of the last 30 years, between 1984 and 2013. In fact, when the market was down 37% in 2008, his portfolio model was down only 3.93%. I sure wish I had known this back then. Or how about David Swensen, the man who took Yale's endowment from $1 billion to more than $23.9 billion while averaging 14% annually? He too shared his ideal allocation for you. Priceless information all captured in Section 6. Invest like the 0.001%, the billionaire's playbook. So if you look at these experts' models without fully understanding asset allocation, it's like building a house on a weak foundation. Or if you focus on asset allocation before knowing your goals, it will be a complete waste of time. And maybe most importantly, if we don't protect you from the people looking to take a good chunk of your wealth, all is lost. That's why we are uncovering the 9 myths. Step 2 in our 7 simple steps to financial freedom, so that you become an insider, so that you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It pays to be a star. Even after everything we have showed you about actively managed mutual funds, there are undoubtedly those who will say, "Tony, I have done my research and not to worry. I only invest in 5-star funds, nothing less." Oh, really? According to Morningstar, over the decade ending December 2009, roughly 72% of all fund deposits, about $2 trillion, flowed to 4- and 5-star funds. For those who aren't familiar, Morningstar is the most popular and thorough service for evaluating mutual funds, and they apply a 5-star ranking system to the past performance. Brokers are starry-eyed as they share with you the next hot fund. David Swensen told me that the stars are so important that mutual fund companies are quick to eliminate funds which fall below the 4-star threshold. For a 5-year period ending 2012, 27% of domestic equity funds and 23% of international equity funds were either merged or liquidated, a common practice to eliminate a poor track record from a family of funds. It's routine for mutual fund companies to set up multiple new funds to see which one is hot and euthanize the others. As Jack Bogle explains, a firm will go out and start 5 incubation funds, and they will try and shoot the lights out with all 5 of them. And of course, they don't with 4 of them, but they do with 1. So they drop the other 4 and take the one that did very well public with a great track record and sell that track record. Imagine we could adopt this practice in our own investing life. What if you could pick 5 stocks, and if 4 went down and only 1 went up, you could pretend all your losers didn't happen, and then tell your friends that you are the hottest stock picker since Warren Buffett. In addition, the lackluster performance of these 4- and 5-star supernovas, dying stars, is well researched in a Wall Street Journal article entitled "Investors Caught with Stars in Their Eyes." A study was done in which the researchers went back to 1999 and studied the 10-year subsequent performance of those who bought 5-star funds. Their findings? Of the 248 mutual stock funds with 5-star ratings at the start of the period, just 4 still kept that rank after 10 years. How many times have you picked a shooting star only to watch it burn out? We all have at some point. And here we see that it's because we had less than 2% odds that the shooting star wouldn't fizzle into darkness. We all want the guy with the hot hand, but history tells us that it's the hot hand that will inevitably turn cold. Isn't that why Vegas always wins? An insider knows that chasing the high flyer is chasing the wind. But it's human nature to chase performance. It's almost irresistible. Yet the herd mentality quite literally results in financial destruction for millions of families. And I know that if you are listening to this book, you are not willing to fall victim any longer. You're becoming an insider now. And what other cool strategies do insiders use? Let's find out. Upside with protection. In the past 100 years, the market was up approximately 70% of the time. But that leaves 30% of the time that the market was down. So while investing in the indexes is a great solution for a portion of your money, it shouldn't be for all of your money. Markets are volatile at times, so it only makes sense that you will want to protect a portion of your portfolio if or when the markets take another big dive. Heck, there have been 250% hits since 2000. One exciting strategy we will introduce allows us to make money when the market, index, goes up, yet simultaneously guarantee that we will not lose our original investment if the market goes down. The catch? You don't get to capture or participate in all of the gains. Most are in disbelief when I explain that there are tools out there that can guarantee that you don't lose while still giving you the ability to participate in market wins. Why haven't you heard of them? Because they're typically reserved for the high net worth. I will show you one of the only places where the average investor can access these. Imagine your friends with their baffled and even suspicious looks when you tell them you make money when the market goes up but don't lose money when it goes down. This strategy alone can completely change the way you feel about investing. It's your safety rope while climbing the mountain when everyone else is white-knuckling it with hope. Imagine the feeling of certainty, of peace of mind, knowing that you aren't at risk. How would this change your life? How would you feel when you open up your monthly statements? Would you be gritting your teeth or feel calm and collected? We've only scratched the surface of the incredible insight and tools that lay ahead, so you must stay tuned. But for now, we can remember the following. Stocks have by far been the best place to be for long-term growth over time. Stocks are volatile. You will learn from the market masters how to smooth out the ride by investing in and diversifying across multiple different indexes. Don't be sold that someone is going to beat the market. Instead, align yourself with the market. Once you put your indexing plan in place, which we will do step by step, you won't have to spend your time trying to pick which stock to buy because the index has done it for you. This will save you a tremendous amount of time and angst in trying to pick a winner. Begin to think like an insider. Never again will you tolerate the herd mentality in your own life. Fees on fees. By tapping into the power of indexing, by passively owning the market, you are also combating our second myth. Nearly every person I ask doesn't know exactly how much they are paying in fees. I'll admit I also didn't know at one stage in my life. The fee factories have become masterful at either hiding the fees or making them appear negligible. No big deal. Nothing could be further from the truth. When climbing the mountain of financial freedom, you will need every bit of forward progress to succeed. You can't afford to take two steps forward and one step back by letting excessive fees drain your account. So the real question is, are you funding your retirement or someone else's? Find out now. Chapter 2.2. Myth 2. Our fees? They're a small price to pay. The mutual fund industry is now the world's largest skimming operation, a $7 trillion trough from which fund managers, brokers, and other insiders are steadily siphoning off an excessive slice of the nation's household, college, and retirement savings. Senator Peter Fitzgerald, co-sponsor of the Mutual Fund Reform Act of 2004, killed by the Senate Banking Committee. Insult to injury. Nothing is more infuriating than to be told one price but then realize that you are paying another. When you agree on the price of a new car, but when it comes down to signing the documents, a couple thousand in fees magically appear. Or checking out of a hotel to discover an additional resort fee, a tourism tax, a wireless internet fee, fees for towels. You get the point. It's frustrating. We feel trapped, we feel snowed, strong-armed, or simply deceived into paying more than we should. With the help of fine print, the $13 trillion mutual fund industry is hands down the most masterful in the craft of hiding fees. In a Forbes article entitled, "The True Cost of Owning a Mutual Fund," Ty Bernicke peels back the layers to dissect the actual cost and arrives at a heart-stopping total. The average cost of owning a mutual fund is 3.17% per year. If 3.17% doesn't sound like a big number to you, think of it in light of what we just learned about becoming or owning the market. For example, you can own the entire market, all 500 stocks in the S&P 500, for example, for as little as 0.14%, or as the investment world calls it, 14 basis points. That's just 14 cents for every $100 you invest. Just a quick FYI for you insiders, there are 100 basis points in 1%, so 50 basis points is 0.5%, and so on. Owning the entire market is accomplished through a low-cost index fund such as those offered through Vanguard or Dimensional Funds. And we already know that owning the market beats 96% of all the mutual fund stock pickers over a sustained period. Sure, you might be willing to pay 3% to an extraordinary hedge fund manager like Ray Dalio, who has a 21% annualized return, before fees, since launching his fund. But with most mutual funds, we are paying nearly 30 times or 3,000% more in fees, and for what? Inferior performance. Can you imagine paying 30 times more for the same type of car your neighbor owns, and it only goes 25 miles per hour to boot? This is exactly what is happening today. Neighbors are both invested in the market, but one is shelling out fistfuls of cash each year, while the other is paying pennies on the dollar. Same returns, different results. The cost of ignorance. Three childhood friends, Jason, Matthew, and Taylor, at age 35, all have $100,000 to invest. Each selects a different mutual fund, and all three are lucky enough to have equal performance in the market of 7% annually. At age 65, they get together to compare account balances. On deeper inspection, they realize that the fees they have been paying are drastically different from one another. They are paying annual fees of 1%, 2%, and 3% respectively. Next is the impact of fees on their ending account balance. Jason: $100,000 growing at 7% minus 3% in annual fees equals $324,340. Matthew: $100,000 growing at 7% minus 2% in annual fees equals $432,194. Taylor: $100,000 growing at 7% minus 1% in annual fees equals $574,349. Same investment amount, same returns, and Taylor has nearly twice as much money as her friend Jason. Which horse do you bet on? the one with a 100-pound jockey or the 300-pound jockey. Just 1% here, 1% there. Doesn't sound like much, but compounded over time, it could be the difference between your money lasting your entire life or surviving on government or family assistance. It's the difference between teeth-clenching anxiety about your bills or peace of mind to live as you wish and enjoy life. Practically, it can often mean the difference of working a full decade longer before you can have the freedom to quit working if you choose to. As Jack Bogle has shown us, by paying excessive fees, you are giving up 50% to 70% of your future nest egg. Now, this example is hypothetical, so let's get a bit more real. Between January 1, 2000 and December 31, 2012, the S&P 500 was flat. No returns. This period includes what is often called the lost decade because most people made no progress but still endured massive volatility with the run-up through 2007, the free fall in 2008, and the bull market run which began in 2009. So let's say you had your life savings of $100,000 invested. And if you simply owned or mimicked the market during this 12-year period, your account was flat and your fees were minimal. But if you paid the 3.1% in average annual fees and assuming your mutual fund manager could even match the market, you would have paid over $30,000 in fees. So your account was down 40%, only $60,000 left, but the market was flat. You put up the capital, you took all the risk, and they made money no matter what happened. I am smarter than that. Now, you might be thinking, Tony, I am smarter than that. I looked at the expense ratio of my mutual funds and it's only 1%. Heck, I even have some no-load mutual funds. Well, I have some swampland in Florida to sell you. In all seriousness, this is the exact conclusion they want you to arrive at. Like the sleight-of-hand magician, the mutual fund companies use the oldest trick in the book, misdirection. They want us to focus on the wrong object while they subtly remove our watch. The expense ratio is the sticker price most commonly reported in the marketing materials, but it certainly doesn't tell the whole story. And let me be the first to confess that at one stage in my life I thought I was investing intelligently, and I owned my share of the top 5-star actively managed mutual funds. I had done my homework, looked at the expense ratios, consulted a broker. But like you, I am busy making a living and taking care of my family. I didn't have the time to sit down and read 50 pages of disclosures. The laundry list of fees is shrouded within the fine print. It takes a PhD in economics to figure it out. PhD in fees. Just after the 2008 crash, Robert Hilton Smith graduated with a PhD in economics and decided to take a job with the policy think tank Demos. And like all of us, nothing he learned in college would prepare him for how to create a successful investment strategy. So like most, he started making dutiful contributions to his 401k. But even though the market was rising, his account would rarely rise with the market. He knew something was wrong, so he decided to take it on as a research project for work. First, he started by reading the 50-plus page prospectuses of each of the 20 funds he invested in. Incredibly boring and dry legalese designed to be, in Hilton Smith's words, very opaque. There was language he couldn't decipher, acronyms he hadn't a clue what they stood for, and most importantly, a catalog of 17 different fees that were being charged. There were also additional costs that weren't direct fees per se, but were passed on to and paid for by the investors nonetheless. To better shroud the fees, Wall Street and the vast majority of 401k plan providers have come up with some pretty diverse and confusing terminology. Asset management fees, 12b1 fees / marketing fees, trading costs, brokerage commissions, spread costs, market impact costs, soft dollar costs, redemption fees, account fees, purchase fees, record keeping fees, plan administrative fees, and on and on. Call them what you want, they all cost you money. They all pull you backward down the mountain. After a solid month of research, Hilton Smith came to the conclusion that there wasn't a chance in hell that his 401k account would flourish, with these excessive and hidden fees acting as a hole in his boat. In his report titled Savings Drain, The Hidden 8 Excessive Costs of 401ks, he calculated that the average worker will lose $154,794 to 401k fees over his or her lifetime, based on an annual income of approximately $30,000 per year and saving 5% of their income each year. A higher income worker making approximately $90,000 per year will lose upwards of $277,000 in fees in his lifetime. Hilton Smith and Demos have done a great social good in exposing the tyranny of compounding costs. Death by a thousand cuts. In ancient China, death by a thousand cuts was the cruelest form of torture because of how long the process took to kill the victim. Today, the victim is the American investor, and the proverbial blade is the excessive fees that slowly but surely bleed the investor dry. David Swenson is the chief investment officer of Yale's endowment. He has grown the fund from $1 billion to more than $20 billion, and he is considered to be the Warren Buffett of institutional investing. When I sat down with him in his Yale office, I was enlightened yet angered when he shared the real truth regarding the fee factories that are slaughtering Americans. David shared, "Overwhelmingly, mutual funds extract enormous sums from investors in exchange for providing a shocking disservice." Later in the book, we will sit down and look over David's shoulder at his portfolio recommendations, but it doesn't matter how great your strategy if excessive fees are eroding the path beneath your feet. The asset gathering complex and the actively managed mutual funds they peddle are, for the most part, a disastrous social experiment that began with the advent of the 401k in the early 80s. The 401k was not a bad concept. It was a good idea for those who wanted to put extra money away. But it was just meant to be a supplement to a traditional pension plan. Today, there is over $13 trillion in managed mutual funds, much of which is held in retirement accounts, such as 401ks and IRAs. They were supposed to get us to our retirement goal. They were supposed to beat the market. But not only do they rarely beat the market, a significant majority are charging astronomical fees for their mediocrity. The aggregate of these fees will ultimately cost tens of millions of people their quality of life and could very well be the number one danger and destroyer of your financial freedom. Sound like an overstatement? Jack Bogle, founder of Vanguard, says, "I think high costs eroding already lower returns are as much of a risk for investors as the economic situation in Europe or China." It gets worse. So let's recap. Not only will the vast majority, 96%, of actively managed mutual funds not beat the market, they are going to charge us an arm and a leg and extract up to two-thirds of our potential nest egg in fees. But here's the kicker. They're going to have the nerve to look you in the eye and tell you that they truly have your best interests at heart while simultaneously lobbying Congress to make sure that that is never the case. The truth/solution. First, you need to know how much you are paying. I recommend visiting the investment software website Personal Fund at personalfund.com. for its cost calculator that analyzes each of your funds and looks beyond just the expense ratio to the additional costs as well. Keep in mind these calculators can only estimate the fees. They can't take into account other costs such as taxes because each person's tax bracket may differ. You may also own the mutual fund inside your 401k in which you won't be paying taxes on the growth but instead will be paying a plan administrator. Some 401k plans are low cost while others are hefty with expenses. The average plan administrator charges 1.3% to 1.5% annually, according to the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office. That's $1,300 for every $100,000 just to participate in the 401k. So when you add this 1.3% for the plan administration to the total mutual fund cost of 3.17%, it can actually be more expensive to own a fund than a tax-free account when compared with a taxable account, a whopping total of 4.47% per year. Think about it. You are saving 10%, but half of it is being paid in fees. How insane is that? But as you'll learn here, you don't have to be caught in this trap. By becoming an insider, you can put a stop to this thievery today. Fees this high are the equivalent of climbing Everest in flip-flops and a tank top. You were dead before you got